Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's ANGI.com.
Greetings, humans. You have entered the command zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
It's a beautiful night. We're looking for something dumb to do. Hey, baby, I think I want to marry you.
Congratulations to the newlywed couple, Olivia Valdarin and Edgar. Is that, those are the two?
It is Edgar, but congratulations only to Olivia, I think, in this case.
Yeah. Edgar is still, I mean, he's looking pretty dead these days, but that's cool. I mean, look.
Edgar aged a lot since the last time we saw him. That's true.
Yeah. He's looking pretty funky. What's up, everyone? You're watching / listening to the Command Zone podcast. This is the mono-colored new commander review from Crimson Vow. The Vow, of course, being the wedding between our two titular characters. And we've got some cool cards to talk about today.
Yeah, not as many as the multicolored, which is great. There are six monocolored commanders in the set. We're going to talk about all of them, all the cool synergies, combos, the normal thing we do. But before we get into it, if you are watching this episode, you are probably excited to build around some of the commanders we're about to talk about. But first, you need to have those cards in your possession if you want to build those decks. And the best place to go to get all of your magic cards is channelfireball.com/command. They have a brand new marketplace, tons of vendors. All the vendors are vetted, so you're never going to get professional level of quality. And hey, let's face it, you're going to buy magic cards anyway. Crimson Vow looks sweet. You're going to get a bunch of these cards no matter what it is that we say today. You may as well just use our affiliate link, channelfireball.com/command, when you are buying that stuff that you're going to get anyway, and you'll just get thrown in as gravy supporting all of our content, game nights, extra turns, all of it.
Yep, and with every new set means new commander products, new cards for commander, so you want to pick those up before everyone else. Surprise your table with a card that they have no idea is going to hit them and win the game that way. That's always a lot of fun. Also, big shout out to Ultra Pro, who makes all of the amazing product that we feature on game nights and extra turns. You can see in front of us these incredible new deck boxes that they've made with the showcase art. I've got Arlen on mine, you have good old Olivia on yours. These are super high quality deck boxes. They are so highly reviewed everywhere across the board. They've got amazing magnetic clasps, and they're just one of many different offerings that Ultra Pro has when it comes to protecting your game pieces. Josh and I have been using them for decades now, quite literally, and I have always been so happy to have my product protected whenever I'm traveling, going to an LGS or a convention, hopefully more of those soon in the future. So by buying Ultra Pro, you're also supporting the show, this show, our shows, all the shows.
All the shows, all the content. And the final way to support all of that is directly if you go to patreon.com/command zone. You can talk to Jimmy and I on our Discord each and every day if you're at the right Patreon level. All patrons get access to extra turns and game nights earlier than the general public, so they get to watch that stuff before it comes out. And spoiler alert, the Crimson Vow episode of my brain is working overtime here because I'm like, does this episode come out before the Crimson Vow game nights? And I believe it does.
Your internal calendar is pretty impressive.
Yeah, we'll see. But you will get to watch at least the next episode of game nights, whatever it is, early, the next episode of extra turns early if you
ad
become
free.
Yeah, if you become a patron. And also another perk is we shout out one lucky patron every single episode, and this episode is dedicated to Juan Franco. You rock.
Thank you, Juan. Okay.
Let's get into it. The monocolored commanders from Crimson Vow. Now, listen.
Small note.
Yeah, there are two partners with pairings, one in each commander pre-con deck for this set. We're not going to talk about those in this episode because, for all intents and purposes, those are multicolored, right? Nobody's really going to run just one of them as the lead singer of their deck. Or, you know, I know there's somebody out there going, well, I will, but like, it's a very small percentage. So we are going to talk about the monocolored commanders, though, that do come in the commander product, because you have no choice but to run those as monocolored decks if you want them to be your lead singer. So again, six cards total. New / returning mechanics. We talked about this already in our multicolored set review, which was episode 429. So if you want to hear us talk about the mechanics, the new and returning, go see that episode. We're not going to waste any time here.
Yep. Unfortunately, not too many complicated mechanics in the cards today. Nice and straightforward. So let's dive into it in alphabetical order, no less.
In alphabetical order. Okay. The first monocolored commander is a mono blue one. It's interesting. It's Donal, Herald of Wings. 2 blue-blue for a 3/3 human wizard. It says, whenever you cast a non-legendary creature spell with flying, you may copy it, except the copy is a 1/1 spirit in addition to its other types.
Ooh.
Do this only once each turn. And it says in parentheses, the copy becomes a token. So if you cast a non-legendary creature spell with flying, you make a token copy of it that's a 1/1 spirit, which will also have flying. So basically, you get its abilities, but not its power and toughness.
Yeah, really important to note, and this has caused a lot of confusion, when you're copying a spell, you are not creating a token. So cards like Anointed Procession, Doubling Season, they don't actually make you a second copy of it. You are copying the spell, and the spell becomes a token.
So it doesn't create a token. It
doesn't create a token, right. So it's basically the exact same card, but it is a 1/1 spirit in addition to its other types, and it cannot be a legendary spell that you're copying with Donal. Very important.
We should note that this card is from the Spirit Squadron Commander Precon, which was revealed by our friend over at MTG Mudsta. Again, it says non-legendary, so that's important to just make sure. So it's flying, non-legendary cards with ETBs are going to be... probably for the most part. I guess there are a lot of cards without ETBs that are still going to be good.
Yeah. But I mean, just getting two of anything in general, if it's a good card, is going to give you a thumbs up. So we'll talk about some good flyers to copy.
Yeah, let's talk about the best flyers to copy here. One of my favorite cards of all time. I think yours as well, Jimmy.
Mm-hmm.
It happens to be a flyer. It's Moldrifter.
Oh, it's so cute.
So it's 4 and a blue for a 2/2 flyer. When it enters the battlefield, you draw 2 cards. But it has Evoke for 2 and a blue, which means if you pay the Evoke cost, when it enters the battlefield, you sacrifice it. But you'll still get to draw 2 cards.
Yeah.
The great thing here is, if you evoke it out, you'll get still the 1/1
copy spell
and draw 4.
Yeah.
So for 3 mana, draw 4, get a 1/1.
That's pretty darn good.
That's broken.
Yeah, that is actually close to broken when it comes to the rate that you're going to get in blue normally. So
yeah, so that's a very simple interaction. Just shows you, I think, how good ETBs are, because this Donald kind of works as a slightly better Panharmonicon in a lot of ways.
Yeah, and he's the Herald of Wings, so he cares about flyers, and there just so happen to be a lot of high value flying creatures. Moldrifter is obviously one that we talk about a bunch on the show, and anytime you can get around the vote cost, anytime you can cheat mana cost, essentially, it's always going to be a good thing. There's also another amazing card called Consecrated Sphinx.
One without an ETB.
Yeah, exactly. And I actually got 2 of those out on a recent episode of Extra Turns. I actually got 3 of them at one point.
I would say, is that a ringing endorsement of having a lot of that card? Because it seems like, I don't want to spoil anything, but that could be dangerous.
Yeah, it's actually really dangerous. And that single event, right, I had Volo in that case. I copied a Consecrated Sphinx, had 2 of them. That completely gave me the advantage. Because even if you get rid of one, you still have the other. And being able to draw that many cards with 2 Sphinxes out is pretty nuts.
And the fact that it's a 1/1 doesn't really matter, because nobody's playing Consecrated Sphinx because it's a 4/6 flyer, right?
They're playing it
because it draws 2 cards when your opponents draw 1 card. Mm-hmm. So being able to draw 4 cards when your opponent draws a card is pretty nuts. And I like that as an example of something that's not an enter the battlefield effect.
Yep.
And here's another one that's not an enter the battlefield effect that would be good to copy.
Curiosity Crafter. It's a card that says you have no maximum hand size, which is great with your Consecrated Sphinx you just played, hopefully. And whenever a creature token you control deals combat damage to a player, draw a card. So creature tokens, you're going to be making a lot with Donald. Curiosity Crafter is happy for that.
Flying too.
Yeah, and every single creature that you're playing in this deck should presumably have flying. So that means you're making a token every single time with Donald. Again, only once a turn, but every time that flying creature hits someone, and it's a good chance it will, for a 1/1 with flying, those often get in, you'll draw a card. So you'll refill your hand, and you'll be able to find more of these awesome flyers to cast and not just murder people with. Same goes for Windreader Sphinx. It's a very similar card. Whenever a creature with flying attacks, you may draw a card. So it's both on your side, and if someone else decides to attack you with a flyer.
7 CMC, though. I like the Curiosity Crafter better.
Indeed.
There's stuff that's going to allow you to steal things. So Gilded Drake and Sower of Temptation both have flying, both steal other creatures.
Gilded Drake
now steal 2 things.
Yeah.
Gilded Drake's insane because you give them a 1/1 token.
Mm-hmm.
and you get their best thing. I mean, Gilded Drake is always insane.
Yeah. Yeah, for two
mana. You know, I cracked one of those in a pack.
That may have been the most unreal. That's why I'm pretty sure we're living in a simulation.
Dude, okay.
The cards that we cracked.
It was insane.
It's insane.
So we, this is a little side tangent, sorry. We went to Utah to visit Post Malone back in like June or something. Mm-hmm. He took us to his LGS, and then the sort of the oldest packs they had there were the Urza's block stuff.
Yep.
So we decided to buy, what is it, Saga, Legacy?
Saga.
Destiny? Yeah. Saga. And Pussy and I had a kind of like, if you buy one and crack one, I'll buy one and crack one. So I was like, okay. So the best card you can get is Gaia's Cradle, I think.
That's in the next one. So the best one in this set is the Monolith. Grim Monolith, yeah.
So he cracks a Grim Monolith in his, and I crack a Gilded Drake in mine, which is like the second best card you could get.
Yeah.
So it's pretty crazy.
It's crazy. The chances of that happening are almost infinitesimally small. And it was a pre-open box.
Yeah.
Just two random packs out of it from the store. I could not believe my eyes. Anyway, yeah. Gilded Drake, very good in the Donald deck, obviously getting two copies of it. Same with Sword of Temptation. You can also get a lot of creatures that help untap things, which means you're going to do it twice as much. So a Palancron is just classic combo maker. It's a 7-mana flyer. When it enters the battlefield, you untap up to 7 lands. However you cast this with Donald, that means 14 lands, so you could tap them all with the triggers on the stack, untap them, float some more mana, do something crazy with all that mana still in your main phase.
Yeah, a lot of times you have, let's say, 7 mana, but you end up 7 mana by the time that's over.
Yeah.
Plus, Palancron bounces itself as its activated ability back to your hand, which means you just... So even if you don't go infinite with it, it's just like giving you 7 mana every turn.
Yeah, you can just get it back and you have the token copy still out there, so next turn you can play your Palancron and go all out again.
Yep. Cloud of Fairies is another one. It's a 2-mana for a 1/1 flyer. When it enters the battlefield, untap 2 lands. So again, you could untap 4 lands with this thing when it makes the copies.
Yep, Peregrine Drake, almost the exact same thing. 5 lands for a 5-mana flyer. So all of these are very similar in their builds, but they will allow you to do a lot with them. And then I think there's just a ton of combo potential. You're in mono blue, so you're going to have a lot of shenanigans. Scholar of the Lost Trove is just, again, it's a 7-mana card, but these are the kinds of cards you play it. You get 2 triggers of it. You can cast an instant sorcery or artifact from your graveyard without paying its mana cost, so getting to do that twice should typically end the game for you. Same thing goes for Diluvian
Primordial. This is brutal.
Yeah, Diluvian Primordial again. And so at this point, we've spoken about what, like 6 different cards with 5 or 6 or 7 CMC. So you probably take your pick in the direction you would go.
Right.
With this
don't
deck.
Put all of these in the deck because then you'll do nothing for the first 6 turns of the game.
Yeah, but the combo potential might be the best with just this single card, which you wrote down best card in the deck, and it might be.
Yeah, I think it's weird, but Shrieking Drake might be the best card in this deck. It's 1 blue mana for a 1/1 flyer, Drake. But it says, when it enters the battlefield, return a creature you control to its owner's hand. Mm. So what's great about this is you're going to make a copy of it, you're going to bounce 2 creatures you control, and it can bounce itself.
Yeah.
For 1 mana. So you bounce itself, and then it resets, you know, something else that you can then play later, which is really good. And one of the things, we're going to talk about combo potential a little farther here, but if you can get like a Panharmonicon or something with this,
woo-hoo,
you could actually bounce Donald to replay it, so then you could trigger it again on the turn, because you don't do this only once each turn.
Right, but if Donald gets bounced or flickered, it'll see itself as a new copy, and then you can go all out again.
You'll say, oh, we haven't done this before, because I wasn't here before.
Right, so some Palancron, Shrieking Drake, Donald combo, you're just
Peregrine Drake, anything like that.
Off to the races. And then you can also just play meaner magic, so you can play counter spells, like Glenelender, Archmage.
Now
you get essentially 3 counters on the stick, because you play the Glenelender, you copy it, and that one still has the ability to pay a blue and sack to counter target non-creature spell, and that token disappears, but then you have your regular Glenelender, who will die, come back, persist, and then with Shrieking Drake, maybe you bounce back. Never mind. I don't want you to do this. No one do this.
Siren Storm Tamer is another counter spell sort of on a 1/1 flying creature, so you get 2 of them. Yep. Siren Storm Tamer already very powerful.
Yep. And then there's just a lot of just like regular value creatures you could probably play in this deck. Fairy Seer is a 1 blue mana for a 1/1 flyer. That one enters the battlefield, you scry 2. So that's just scry 4, 1 mana. Pretty good.
Yep.
Pretty good.
Don't forget, you're paying 1 mana for 2 1/1s.
Yeah.
Flying. Like, that's already just really good rate. Like, think of Lingering Souls and things like that. Like, the rate of one mana, 2/1/1 flyers that do something is pretty good.
Mm-hmm. And then you have Warden of Evos out to make all of your flyers cost less, or you can play, like, Ornithopter of Paradise. Get 2 Ornithopters.
2 mana dorks.
And you're in mono blue, so you do need ramp like this.
Remember, Donald does say once each turn, so that means that if you can find flyers that have flash or give them flash, then you can take advantage of it more than just your turn, right? We say this all the time, but those are important words to pay attention to. I do it once on my turn, once on Jimmy's, once on Mel's, once on Maria's. you know, you need a lot of mana or a lot of low CMC things to do that. Yeah. But yeah, it's a possibility. So flyers with flash become a lot better.
Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of spirits that do this. Spectral Sailor is one that's just a one mana flyer that does this. And again, you can just build out a big board, right? And starting pecking in with a bunch of 1/1s is going to win you the game. Brazen Borrower as well, just because it has two different sides to it. So you get to basically, I mean, look, just getting more creatures out and that are all flyers are very good. Dream Eater.
Brutal.
Six mana flash flyer that surveils four when it enters the battlefield. You can return a target non-land permanent in opponent control to its owner's hand.
Bail eight. Bounce two things.
Yeesh.
Yeesh.
Yeah.
And of course, our favorite cards to talk about, Vedalken Orrery, Leyline of Anticipation, Winding Canyons, all just kind of give flash to all your flyers.
Yeah. And then I think you want to like do this a lot, because at some point you don't have the right pieces out, or you just want to recycle the ones that you already have. So cards like Twinning Staff allows you to double a copy up every single time you cast it. It's a 3-mana artifact from a commander precon. Crystal Shard, you're in mono blue, so you can use this to bounce your own creatures to your own hand. And as we mentioned, Panharmonicon, just to double up on every enter the battlefield. Now you're getting like four enter the battlefield triggers.
Oh my gosh, yeah, because if you Shrieking Drake, it enters the battlefield. The token enters the battlefield, triggers twice, and then the regular opens, enters the battlefield, triggers twice. So bounce four of your own things. Actually, you might not even want to do that, so much stuff. But you just be like, whatever, I'll bounce the token as one of them.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
And then there's also Cloudstone Curio, which is like a huge combo piece as well. Just like play a creature, you can bounce a creature. So again, all that stuff I think would be good.
Normal
in
sort
this
of blink
deck.
Shenanigan stuff is going to be good, right?
Yep.
I also think like Spirit Fairies Flying Tribal is a thing. This is the maybe lower powered version. Mm-hmm. And Donald probably goes in the 99 of these decks, but like Inyaz.
Yep.
Donald probably just goes in there, right? Because you have all flyers as creatures, and that's a flying deck. And if you have a certain number of flyers, that's when you start getting to exchange the control of permanents. So getting extra token copies whenever you cast a flyer means you'll have more flyers, which means you'll trigger Inyaz more often.
Right, and you can give them a poopy 1/1 instead of the 6/6 that the actual flyer is.
You can have my 1/1 token that I already got the ETB off of, so whatever.
Right.
And also just think of getting two, like, Patrician Geists.
Oh, yeah.
Which is spells you cast from your graveyard, cost one less to cast, but all your spirits get +1/+1.
Yeah.
So you get all your spirits get +2/+2, or like Drogskull Captain is really good if you get two of them.
Oh, yeah, because they give each other hexproof.
Right.
Other spirits you control get +1/+1 and have hexproof.
Yeah, so the other one is another one to the other one, so they all get hexproof. That's pretty cool.
Double up on the Karmic Guide when you have white in there, and that seems pretty good as well.
Yeah,
so,
get two things back.
Yeah, and then at that point, if all your creatures have entered the battlefield abilities, then you're just hopping on that value train. So it seems pretty good.
I think Donald's pretty strong, and I like that they've found a way to kind of narrow it a little bit by saying, oh, it's got to be with flying, right?
It
seems like a cool card. You're gonna be able to do cool stuff, but you can't just like make any creature, you know, you make a 1/1 spirit token copy of it.
Yeah, has to be flying, like once Volo. A turn, non-legendary, but still pretty darn powerful, as we have seen with Volo.
All right, let's talk about the next one.
It is Geralf, Visionary Stitcher, 2 and a blue for a legendary creature human wizard 1/4. Zombies you control have flying. Ooh. And for a blue, you can tap Geralf and sacrifice another non-token creature. Create an XX blue zombie creature token where X is the sacrifice creature's toughness.
So it's a weird mono blue zombie
matters deck.
Zombie matters, also butts matter.
Butts matter, yeah.
Zombie butts matter.
Zombie butts matter in mono blue. Never would have thought we'd see the day. I would compare this to Ghoul Caller Geesa, who we know is related to Geralf. Geesa is about making X zombies where X is the sacrifice creature's power. So Geesa's like going wide and Geralf is going tall.
He's making one zombie, and cares about the toughness, and she's making a bunch of zombies and cares about the power.
So that's kind
of
cute that they're similar-esque. Geralf being a 3-mana commander, though, I think is pretty important because that means that you can get your game plan online much sooner.
Yeah, although it's a mono blue commander. I mean, let's talk about some cool mono blue zombie cards.
Mm-hmm. There's Clever Scab, 3 and a blue for a 2/4. Oh, Cleaver, sorry.
Leave it to Cleaver.
He is not clever. This guy does not look clever at all. It's a 2/4, so it's got a big butt, and you can pay 3 and tap it to sacrifice another zombie and to create 2 tokens that are copies of the sacrifice creature. So that's actually really great because that means Geralf can now take those creatures. Oh, wait, no, I'm sorry. Non-token copies.
Yeah.
So this is all about, I guess, sacrifice fodder. The Cleaver Scab wants to cleave things.
Well, what you could do is have Geralf make a copy of, or sorry, sacrifice a creature, make a big zombie.
Mm-hmm.
Then you could sacrifice that zombie
to make two of it with the
Cleaver Scab.
I like that. That's pretty fun. Rooftop Storm is obviously the mono blue zombie card of choice.
All zombie spells, creature spells cost 0 now to cast.
Yeah. Except for Geralf himself, because he's not a zombie. Poppet Stitcher is a new one from Midnight Hunt. This just creates zombie tokens with Decayed, and if you make some more, you can flip it into the Poppet Factory, which is actually pretty powerful. It's basically Humility. But it makes creature tokens you control lose all abilities and have base power and toughness 3/3. So it makes all of the tokens you're making a little bit bigger. A little weird with Geralt, though, because he might make like a 6/6.
Yeah, it seems like counter synergy. You're going to make the token smaller.
That's why I think mono blue is a weird place to be for a zombie commander.
I think that's what you have to talk about with this card, which is it gives all zombies flying and it makes zombies. Doesn't care if you're sacrificing zombies, but at the same time, mono blue as a zombie color by itself doesn't seem great. Most mono black has the most zombies.
Yeah.
And then white and blue also have zombie stuff going on. But also, Geralt is sacrificing creatures. So you really want black because, and it's sacrificing non-token creatures. So you really want black because you want recursion, or white at least. But blue is not a recursion color, not for creatures anyway.
Yeah.
So it just seems like it sort of works against itself as far as the way the color pie works. It makes me think that Geralt is not going to be a good zombie commander by itself.
No, I mean, the best you can do is that blue has Kindred Discovery, which allows you to basically choose a creature type and make all the creatures enter when those creatures end the battlefield or taxi draw cards. So it's like, cool, you have zombies. Great. But it doesn't really feel that good. And if you look at the options, it's like, okay, we have like turtles. There's like Aegis Turtles at 0/5 to get a big butt.
Yeah, I think we're transitioning here to discussing like a different version of the deck that's just like, okay, well, what if we said forget zombies, let's make a big butts deck. Like, what are the stuff that blue can cast that costs the least amount of mana but has the highest toughness?
Yeah, that makes
sense. Blue's actually pretty good at that.
Yeah, because Geralt will make the zombie that has flying, so you don't necessarily need to put them in your deck. So blue does have a lot of those because we have some walls and stuff, but Aegis Turtles is 0/5 for one mana. It's like an unplayable card otherwise, but hey, now it becomes a 5/5 when Geralt sacks it.
But you got to tap Geralt, you got to sack it, so it's two mana for a 5/5, which is fine, but it has some downsides. There's Shield Sphere, which is not a blue card, but it's zero mana, 0/6. Yeah.
Oh, this one's a big one. Cherex, the Raging Isle. It's two blue for a 0/17.
Yep. Spells your opponents cast that target Cherex cost two more to cast, but you can pay 3, and Cherex gets plus X, negative X, till end of turn, where X is the number of islands you control.
Which you don't want to do.
It doesn't matter. You're just going to sack this thing to make a 17/17.
Yeah, the problem is that you're making tokens. They're going to be pretty fragile, and there's a lot of ways to get rid of them. There's Wall of Junk. It's 2 mana 0/7 that you would never play in any deck except for something like
this. I think it's fine for them to make like a Toughness Matters, you know, big butts, blue deck. It's too bad this says zombie on it so many times to kind of, I think, lead people maybe in the wrong direction.
Yeah.
I wish the top line, zombies you control are flying, was something else that also had to do with the big butts theme, which would make this a little bit more cohesive as a strategy and maybe get us excited about playing the turtles and stuff, because this feels like, okay, well, if I go with these walls, they're not really gonna, you know, I have to go through these other hoops to get the zombie part going so that I can maybe get flying and, you know, what am I gonna, like, yay, exciting, I hit him for 5 in the air.
Yeah.
You know, it's not that big of a deal. And then if I go a zombie route, I feel like I'm missing all these pieces that black is giving me. It just feels a little, I don't know.
Yeah, I think, I mean, like, this deck is just, like, finding cute interactions. I feel like this is kind of the deck that you can make up in your brain and then play it out and then be like, cool, I did it. I built the deck.
I think I'm probably better off just taking Geralt and putting it into a Dimir Zombies deck with another commander.
Yeah,
you know, that's probably...
You got a lot bigger butts and you got many more zombies to play with. Otherwise, you could do some silly things. Everyone's always looking for ways to break, like, Phyrexian Dreadnought, which is a 1-mana 12/12. You can enter the battlefield with a trigger on the sack. Geralt sacks it, makes a 12/12. But, yeah, you know, at this point, just put it in a black deck or a blue-black deck, because you got like Unhallowed Phalanx, it's 0/113 that just came out in Midnight or Crimson Vow.
Sweet.
Yeah, we're not that excited about it.
What does mine say, dude? All right, okay. Let's move on to the next one, which is a mono-black flip card. It's not a Daybound Nightbound card, it's a transform card.
Yep,
it is Henrika Domnathy.
Don't ask me.
Don't. Wow.
Yeah, we did it.
All right. Henrika is 2BB for a 1/3 vampire legendary with flying. At the beginning of combat on your turn, choose one that hasn't been chosen.
Mm.
Each player sacrifices a creature. You draw a card and lose one life, or transform Henrika. Don't ask me. So, at the beginning of combat on your turn, you can draw a card and lose a life the first time, but the next time, the next combat, you won't be able to do that. You have to choose one of the other ones because you've already chosen the draw card part.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone's wondering, what does Henrika do when transformed? She becomes Henrika Infernal Seer, a 3-4 vampire with flying, death touch, and lifelink.
Oh, the holy trinity.
A 3-4 vampire nighthawk, kind of.
Yeah, pretty nice.
But has an activated ability of one black-black. So for every one black-black that you pay, each creature you control with flying, death touch, and or lifelink gets +1/+0 until end of turn.
Okay. So it's going to pump up your entire team of flying, death touch, or lifelinkers. It can be any of those three or all three. It doesn't really matter.
I wish I would have given +1/+0 for each of those that they have.
That would be pretty cool, right?
Because this 3 mana, at least she gets 3 power.
Yeah.
But 3 mana, you know, she gets 1 power. I know, you're hoping to have, like, some other vampires out there that have some of this stuff. Yeah. But and it's just a lot of mana to pump your team.
I guess they have to make it kind of balanced for the limited type
and first standard and stuff.
Yeah, and historic and all that.
I guess maybe they got to think about that.
Yeah, so Henrika is interesting. It's definitely one of those cards that I think it looks pretty good on the surface for just being like a cool mythic with a sweet backside. But each player sacrificing a creature is typically not amazing in Commander. So I think what you want to do is just make use of Henrika Domnathy as many times as possible, because the front side, drawing a card, losing a life every turn, that's pretty good.
And the sacrifice effect can be good, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes you're going to want to do that. I wish it didn't say that choose one that hasn't been chosen, because it feels like this is a weird card where you don't actually want to flip it that often. You'd rather have the front side. I'd rather be drawing the cards or making people sack the creatures most of the time, and then flip it only in the instance where I have a big enough board where that's going
to matter.
To try
and swing out, yeah.
Yeah, so it's kind of unfortunate that it's, you know, once you do the other two, you have to flip it, unless you've, you know, jumped through some hoops, sacked it, recurred it somehow, blinked it, I guess, but you're in mono black, so you probably can't do that.
Not much blinking in mono black. I think you have recursion in mono black, obviously. Phyrexian Reclamation is a way to bring cards back from your graveyard to your hand. There's also a lot of reanimate type stuff. I actually like, if you play this deck, maybe you're playing a lot of cards like Kaya's Ghost Form, which you enchant a creature, or it says when next time this creature would die, it returns to your battlefield under your control in the next end step or whatever.
Oh, that's nice, because you can play Henrika, Kaya's Ghost Form it, choose the each player sacrifices a creature thing. Boom, you sacrifice Henrika, but it has Kai's Ghost Form and comes back,
yeah.
And now you could choose sacrifice a creature next turn again. It's each combat, though, so you can't, it's not even like you get your second Plague Crafter trigger or something.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. And then just comparing this to like a Shieldred makes you go, I don't know.
Well, Shieldred costs 7 mana, though.
True. But at least it does it every upkeep, right? It's like a consistent effect. Henrika, I feel like just having to wait every turn, everyone sees it coming, they can play around it, it's not going to be as effective.
Any combo that makes infinite black mana will equal infinite damage with Henrika. So once you get her flipped, if you have infinite mana, you can infinitely pump at least Henrika. You'll gain infinite life. Not technically infinite, right? You have to choose a number, but 1 million life or whatever.
Some multiple of 3.
Yeah. So I guess that's cool. There are ways in mono black to make infinite mana. A classic one is Machias the Unhallowed plus Puppeteer Click plus Phyrexian Altar.
Yeah, just a way to just get stuff back over and over and over and over again, and the Phyrexian Altar is going to make you the black mana every single time.
But, you know, if you can make infinite mana, I think we've pretty well concluded that you will win in some way, shape, or form. You don't necessarily need this, you know, Henrika to do it.
So Henrika is probably just best if you're looking for a sort of like a beat facey type commander in mono black. You can sort of maybe theme it around vampires, because there are a lot of creatures that give you similar effects like Vampire Nighthawk and Nighthawk Scavenger.
Yeah, I mean, you really don't need them to be vampires. They just have to have Flying, Death Touch, or Lifelink, and then you kind of go wide, because she's going to pump all the creatures. Mm-hmm. So that feels like she incentivizes you to just be like, have a lot of flyers or whatever, right? It's probably flyers, because they're the easiest to kind of find. But yeah, if you've got some Lifelink and Death Touch mixed in there, fine.
Yeah, Bitter Blossom might be the best for this, because it makes you flyers early on, gives you sacrifice fodder when you need it, and then you just make them all nice and buff with Henrika. Well, I guess not buff, they're attacky strong. And you can play like Whip of Erebos, give your creatures lifelink, so now everyone gets the benefit. Archetype of Finality is the same, but for Death Touch.
That's cool.
If you wanted to fit this in the 99,
okay,
there's a lot of different places to do it. So Zagreus, Thief of Heartbeats, gives you extra combats, so that means you can use Henrika over and over again, but it is 3 mana each time, so it's kind of a pain. But it gives the other creatures you control have Death Touch, so that is a way for everyone to get there with Death Touch. Falthus, Shadowcat Familiar, allows you to pair with other commanders that have Death Touch.
I want to go back to Zagreus really quick, because extra combats are really good with Henrika for a couple of reasons. One is you'll get through the triggers on her front side, then Transformer, if she pumps, you'll get the pump for every attack that...
Because it stays around for the second combat.
Yeah, and because Zagreus gives Death Touch to everything, you will be pumping your entire team no matter what it is. Mm-hmm. So she does feel like a shoe-in for that deck specifically.
Yeah. I think you could put this in like a choice tribal deck. So Shadrick Silverquill is a deck I built recently that gives you the choice to give players stuff or whatever. As you can also give yourself cool 2/1 flyers. And then you also have Rankle Master of Pranks, which people are saying is the better version of
Henrika.
It does
feel just better, right? Yeah.
Yeah, but it's, again, similar. Like, you got to make some choices, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, I like what you mentioned about Falthus. So they have sort of been slowly building this Death Touch tribal, you know, they slowly giving it some tools over the last couple of years. So maybe that's going to become something. And Henrika feels like it's a piece in that deck. Yeah. Although Falthus is a partner, so you can pair it with something else and get a couple more colors going, because I don't think Mono Black's probably going to get there.
Yes, please. More colors, please. And then Taysa Karlov makes a lot of tokens with Vigilance and Lifelink. So that might be good for Henrika because you're making lots of small flyers or whatever it is. And then the Black's Vexing Pest deck, it's got black in it, and all of those pests, bats, insects, and snakes and spiders typically do have either flying, death touch, or lifelink. So you can sort of see Henrika maybe doing a piece of stuff in there.
I think similar to Geralt, she feels like a card that's more likely to go in the 99 of another deck than to kind of get a new deck built around her. But
yeah. But a fun card, and obviously for those that love vampires, this is just another addition to the suite of many options that you already have.
Yeah, it goes in a vampire deck.
Yeah.
All right. So that's three down, Jimmy. We've got three to go.
Not bad.
Three more monocolored commanders to get through, and I think the more powerful ones are coming up. So don't go anywhere. We're just going to take a quick break and hear a message from our sponsors.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's Angie.com.
All right, we are back talking about the mono-colored options for Commander from Crimson Vow. We have six total. The first three, there was like a fun one in there, but the other two were a little lackluster. Can't say the same about these next three because there are a couple in here that are pretty interesting. And this first one, I think, actually might potentially be the most powerful of the bunch. Who knows? We'll see.
All right, it's Jacob Haukin, Inspector. One in a blue for an O2 Human Advisor. You can tap Jacob and draw a card, then exile a card from your hand face down. So it's like exile looting.
Mm-hmm.
You may look at that card for as long as it remains exiled. You may pay four blue. If you do, transform Jacob. And on Jacob's backside, it becomes Haukin's Insight, which is a legendary enchantment.
Oh.
So you don't have a creature anymore. You've got this enchantment instead of your commander. It says, at the beginning of your upkeep, exile the top card of your library face down. You may look at that card for as long as it remains exiled. So it does what Jacob does when it activates, but this does it at the beginning of your upkeep. Mm-hmm. And then it says, once during each of your turns, you may play a land or cast a spell from among the cards exiled with this permanent without paying its mana cost.
Whoa.
So when it says with this permanent, that means it will count the cards that Jacob on the creature side did the sort of looting exile thing. So so presumably the play pattern is something like tap Jacob, draw a card, discard something into exile, then pay the six mana, flip Jacob, and play the spell you just exiled out of your hand without paying its mana cost. That's the thing I think that a lot of people missed originally about this card was it allows you to cast a spell or play a land from among cards exiled with this permanent without paying its mana cost.
Yeah, instantly as well if you flip it. So even though it costs six mana to do so, it doesn't matter because the card you exiled, you can now just cast.
Yeah, so the six mana you can get back immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's only on your turns during each of your turns, and you can only do this with one of the cards exiled. However, we know, and we always say, cheating of mana cost, one of the more powerful things you can do. The front side is a little bit slow.
It's like a merfolk looter. It's like the Jace, right? It's a two mana card Jace that comes out that taps, draws a card, and then you either discard or exile a card.
Feels so, like you want to flip this thing ASAP, right? Like you want to get it turned over because the more powerful side by far is the, hey, cast stuff without paying its mana cost side.
And there's also an enchantment, which is a lot harder to deal with. Mm. So board wipes, all that stuff. You can also technically pay the cost if someone targets Jacob with a removal spell. You can tap, pay the things, flip it to an enchantment that the removal spell can't can't get rid of that, then you're safe.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, so there is some built-in protection there, but yeah, I think you just want to get to this backside as fast as possible.
Yeah, I like the idea that enchantments are safe, because I think you can build this deck and will want to dump some resources early, mm-hmm. even at card disadvantage, to just getting this flipped over. So I think High Tide is a really important card in this deck. Even stuff like Basalt Monolith, Mana Vault, those types of cards that are gonna cost you a little bit as far as card advantage, mm-hmm. or like you may not really want to pay to untap them even at all during the game, but what you're basically using them for is like, I want to get Jacob flipped, you know, if I play it on turn two, I would love to flip it on turn three or four,
yeah,
so that I can, you know, really start to do the thing. And with a legendary enchantment, I'd be feeling pretty good. Like, enchantment removal is more rare than creature removal.
They'd have to bounce it or whatever. Keep in mind, though, that if this enchantment is removed, the cards that you have already exiled no longer are going to be seen by Jacob or Hawkinson, someone that comes back. So it's not like Douthi Voidwalker or Paco and Howdam, which push fetch counters or void counters.
Yeah, they don't put a... Yeah, Jacob... This is a really good point. Jacob does not put a counter of some type on the cards you exiled so that it can see it again later. So if you play Jacob, exile a card, flip it over, and then they destroy the legendary enchantment, you replay Jacob, but that's a different card, and it does not see the exiled cards from before.
Which is a bummer. So those cards are literally just gone forever, unless it's like an Eternal Scourge type card where you can cast it from exile, but you're not really playing that in this deck.
Yeah, so be careful, because I don't think you really want to put a card into exile that's very important to your deck, unless you know for certain you're going to get that Hawkins Insight side and get it in. Otherwise, yeah, you could have that important card in your deck, a combo piece or whatever, just stranded in exile for the remainder of the game, which could be bad.
And people will see this card, and if they know what it does on the other side, they will try and get rid of it. Like, that is definitely going to happen. So you need to, I think, like, in the early game, if you don't have the mana to speed it out, you're just drawing, discarding just for regular value, you know, getting rid of a land or something extra that you don't need. And then when you're flipping it finally, then you're going to want to drop your big sort of like win the game type spells. But also because Hawkins Insight acts similarly to the Prismatic Bridge, every upkeep it's going to reveal a card, you also want some top deck manipulation.
Yeah, you want to know what that card is on top of your deck, or be able to play something good there, because mm-hmm. again, that's going to be, you can't just cast anything out of your hand without paying its mana cost. It's only going to be the cards that this permanent exiled, so you want to make sure that it exiles really good stuff.
Yep, and so you know, tons of Scry in blue, there's Surveil, there's Sensei's Divining Top, there's Mystical Tutor to get stuff to the top of your deck, Scroll Rack, Brainstorm, Mystic Sanctuary, these are all options to manipulate the top of your deck, and then you're just going to want to win the game.
Yeah, what is the really cool stuff that I will want to put on top of my deck, Jimmy, to cast for free?
I don't know, some sort of Eldrazi that costs 10 to 15 mana.
You do cast it from exile without paying its mana cost.
Yep, so you get a cast trigger.
Woo-hoo! Yeah, you get the cast triggers off of the Eldrazi, which is a big deal. Yeah, you can play your Ulamogs, your Kozilex, that
and
kind of stuff.
And because you're running all of those big cards in this deck, you can cast Omniscience, and then, you know, if you just so happen to have those cards in your hand, just dump them all out, and you pretty much should win the game from that point.
Yeah, you can cast Omniscience for free off Hawkins Insight, and then cast the rest of the cards in your hand for free off Omniscience.
The nice thing about this, too, is if you're playing your High Tides and Basalt Monolith, you may actually just get to regularly casting an Omniscience type card, because you're trying to
be
speed
like turn
out
six,
mana.
Boom, just high tide it out. Yeah,
yeah,
I like that. Jyn Gitaxias is another really big, scary card, 10 mana. I love Sphinx of the Second Sun, because it gives you a second upkeep trigger, which means you'll exile two cards with Hawkins Insight. Yep. It will not allow you to cast an additional card off it, but that just gives you a greater chance of finding good stuff.
Yeah, totally. And then if you want to be really mean, you can play all of the extra turn spells, which I think is how you lock the game out. So Expropriate, Time Stretch, Nexus of Fate. Now, Time Stretch, you can play it, and then you get two more turns, two more Hawkins Insight triggers, two more spells cast.
If you have another extra turn or two, like, socked away, it's going to be over, because each extra turn is... Plus, remember, you still get to cast the cards out of your hand and still draw cards for turn and stuff, so it's not like it turns off your ability to just normally play. It just says, also, cast your extra turn spell that you put away for free.
Yeah, so I think that's how you play the competitive version of this deck. You just have tons of fast mana in there, you flip it over, and then just try to chain together five extra turns with an Annihilator for Eldrazi, and you win the game.
Yep.
That there's not too much else past that.
That's how extra turn decks generally tend to work anyway, and you know, this is no different.
Yeah, be the friend of your
table. You can play Elrond's Epiphany, because everybody loves that card, I hear.
They'll love you. Nexus of Fate, they'll love you. And then you also have ways to double up the triggers. So if you're playing Hawkins Insight and you want to get two of them, you got your Strionic Resonator, so that's two upkeep triggers, two more cards to look at, Lithiform Engines, yada, yada, yada. I think this is a magnet for removal, though. This card, if I see it, I'm trying to kill it.
Yeah, but the thing is, you know, you're in blue,
Yeah.
So you're in the best color to protect your stuff because you can run all the counterspells, the Force of Negations, the Swan Songs, the, you know,
Force of Will, regular counterspell. Yeah. All that is here.
So you have the best chance to sort of flip this over. And because you're casting something huge for free,
yeah,
you can hold up your mana, right? It's not costing you much of your mana. So you have better. I just think Mono Blue is always in such a such a better position than most of the other colors to kind of maintain their edge once they do their big thing.
Yeah.
Because they're able to just, I was going to say stifle, but that's a card. They're able to stop the opponent's response to it, you know?
Yeah.
They just have blanket answers, catch all answers, you know, where you're sitting there with a Swords to Plowshares and then sometimes it doesn't do anything against Hawkins Insight or whatever.
Yeah. Like,
and there's certain combos where there's just never a point where a creature pinpoint removal spell will really, you know, solve your issue, but most of the time counterspell will.
Yeah, so I think Jacob Hawken actually pretty powerful. The most shields down you'll be is the turn that you try and flip him for a 6 mana, but at that point hopefully you're holding up Pact of Negation, Force of Negation, whatever it is, to protect it and win with it. If you're going to throw this in the 99 because you're exiling a card from your hand, Raynar the Ever Watchful is the Flying Foretell sort of card from the Kaldheim sets, and you get to make a 1/1 spirit every time. So Raynar could just be good there as just a regular tap, draw, discard, or exile.
And you
card.
Just never flip Jacob.
Yeah,
in that case.
Unless you have
Jacob's
something.
Flip side is exile from your library, which is interesting.
Yep. Yeah. So Raynar, he's just like a better, like the best kind of Merfolk looter for that deck. And then maybe this goes in the Joda deck. I don't know. I mean, at a certain point, I think Jacob is just better by himself. But there's also like Min, Wily Illusionist, which lets you, he cares about drawing more than one card a turn, and then you make some illusions, and then you can put some permanents big onto the battlefield, blah, 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 blah. There's some options here. I think Jacob is just probably best by himself. This may, and maybe I'm speaking out of turn, this may just be a CEDH level deck if done right.
I mean, Mono Blue just kind of can be because of, you know, you got the Thassa's Oracles and it's a self-contained thing. So it's definitely possible. Will it be better than the other Mono Blue options out there?
Probably not.
Probably not. Yeah, probably not. All right, let's move on to the next one, which is Katilda, Dawnheart Martyr. It's 1WW for a star spirit warlock. Has flying, lifelink, and protection from vampires.
Oh.
Katilda's power and toughness are each equal to the number of permanents you control that are spirits and or enchantments. So Katilda is a spirit, so at least a 1/1.
Oh, okay. Nice. Doesn't just die on injury.
Yeah. Has disturb for 3WW. So you may cast this card from your graveyard transformed for its disturb cost. So if Katilda's ever in your graveyard, you know, most normal commanders you put back in the command zone when they die. You don't have to do that, obviously. And Katilda may want to go to your graveyard sometimes. You can pay the 5 mana. And then it comes into play as Katilda's Rising Dawn, which is a legendary enchantment aura. It enchants a creature, and it says enchanted creature has lifelink, flying, and gets protection from vampires.
Ah, makes it Katilda.
And it gets +X/+X, where X is the number of permanents you control that are spirits and or enchantments. So it makes it exactly Katilda, plus whatever its power and toughness was, I suppose, and whatever its abilities were. And then if Katilda's Rising Dawn would be put into a graveyard from anywhere, exile it instead. So you don't just get to keep putting it back in there and disturbing it.
Right.
Which I guess, you know,
that's would have been protection,
pretty powerful. It's interesting because the first time you cast Katilda, it's 3. Then you let it go to the graveyard. For the sake of argument, you don't have to, but then it costs 5 to disturb. Then it would cost 5 to cast Katilda.
And then 7.
Then goes...
Oh, no, then 5 from the graveyard.
Then 5 from the graveyard.
Right.
Then 7, then 5 again. The so it kind of... I don't want to say it bypasses commander tax, but it does interesting things with it, where it's, the commander tax for this card doesn't feel as bad, maybe.
Yeah, it does force you to really play into the whole enchantment aura part of it, because you want to stack this on something that's going to be powerful. I don't think protection against vampires matters at all, if
it
ever.
It might matter for like the next 2 months.
Yeah, maybe.
Because if anything, we'll see more vampire decks for a little while.
Yeah.
Until like Neon Dynasty comes out. And then it'll probably go back to normal. Too bad it doesn't have protection from ninjas.
Yeah, or protection from, I don't know, instants. That would be nicer. I think
that would be way nicer.
Yeah, obviously. That'd be a very powerful card in that case. I think this is a go wide type deck, because the more things you have, the more spirits or enchantments, the bigger this gets.
Oh, interesting.
So I think you want to stick this on something.
You
that's
go spirit,
gonna,
go wide?
Yeah, spirit, go wide. Oyobi is a card that whenever you play a spirit or a cane spell, including Katilda, you make a 3/3 white spirit creature token. Those are the perfect kind of things to stack the backside of Katilda's thing on.
I like that too, because when you disturb Katilda out, you need a target to put the enchantment aura on, right? It's not a creature itself.
Yeah.
So if you've made a bunch of tokens, they kill Katilda and you go, okay, fine, I'll make this token into into a Katilda now.
Mm-hmm. And there's just lots of different spirits. If you look at the Spirit Squadron deck, you'll see obviously a ton of interesting includes in here, including like, well, in our budget upgrade video, we want to put Kamiya False Hope in, which is a Spirit Fog. There's Hanged Executioner, which is like Spirit Removal. And then
Spirit
of course,
Fog is funny because that's what Millicent's art looks like. Yeah. That is a Spirit Fog behind her.
There it is. Actually, all spirits might be a fog.
It's
if you
like
think
behind
about it.
Aragorn when all of the Army of the Dead, that's a Spirit Fog.
The most OP moment. That's another one of those, like, why didn't they just do that from the beginning?
Why don't you save that and do that against Sauron?
Yeah,
okay,
right.
Never mind.
All right, all right. There's, I guess you could go Voltron-y as well, because it's enchantment auras, but in mono white doesn't seem terribly amazing.
It counts enchantments, so you could do sort of a Voltron sub-theme of, you know, put Indestructible, the mm-hmm. enchantment on it. You know, some of the, like, Hyena Umbra, Armored Ascension, kind of buff it up.
Yeah.
White has a lot of that stuff. And white also has, like, Smothering Tithe, Land Tax, Sphere of Safety, like, other really good enchantments.
Yeah.
That will just also serve. Sphere of Safety seems great in that deck because, you know, you're like, hey, I got to swing with my one huge thing here that's, like, a 18-18.
Yeah.
But also, you have to pay 15 mana to attack me with anything. So, you know, I don't really care.
Yeah, and I'm lifelinking. I'm getting a ton of life.
Yeah.
I do think that this goes better in the 99 of an Enchantress deck.
Hmm.
Because the back side's an enchantment, and if you in those decks typically you're drawing so many cards, you have Sithis or whoever it is as your commander, you've got 15 enchantments out, you play the backside of Katilda, this thing just gets +15/+15. It's like a Nettle Cyst type card, and then
it's a way for an enchantment deck to actually win.
Yeah, thank goodness we need more of those. And so then you're smacking in for a ton, flying, lifelink, all that good stuff.
I like that because, man, enchantment decks can draw a lot of cards and put a lot of stuff out, and you're still that you're like, you did a lot, are we dead?
Yeah,
no, go.
And then it's also like, everyone play his card. All right, five things happen.
Yeah.
Would you like to go through them so I don't need to think about it?
Does any of that kill me? No.
No?
Dang it.
Dang it, yeah. So I like Katilda for in the 99 of a deck. I think by itself, this could be maybe an interesting spirit deck, but you want other colors if you're going tribal typically.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like a particularly powerful mono-white commander just because mono-white doesn't have still all the ramp and card draw that's really going to need to make Katilda like work.
Doesn't say card draw on it. Bummer.
All right, we got one more we're going to talk about to go, and this one is from the Vampire Precon deck, Vampiric Bloodline. It is Timothar, Baron of Bats. It's 4BB for a 4/4 legendary creature, Vampire Noble. Has ward, discard a card. What that means is if one of your opponents goes to target Timothar, they have to discard a card to get past the ward. Otherwise, that spell or ability is countered.
Yep.
Whenever another non-token vampire you control dies, you may pay one and exile it. If you do, create a 1/1 black bat creature token with flying. It gains, when this creature deals combat damage to a player, sacrifice it and return the exiled card to the battlefield tapped.
Ooh.
So that's a lot of words, but whenever a vampire that's not a token dies, you turn it into a bat.
The card gets exiled. It gets tucked away somewhere.
Right. And then when that bat hits a player, then it turns back into the creature that it was. You sacrifice the bat and the creature that got exiled comes back. So you're really looking at like vampire ETB tribal, right? Because you get to enter the battlefield when it comes in, you sack it or it dies, becomes the bat, and then the bat turns back into the creature. So you get the ETB a second time. And then also, because now you got a vampire on the battlefield, you could have it die and become a bat again, pay the one for the activated ability of Timothar, turn into the bat, hit him again. So you can keep that going, you know. Obviously, the downside here is if you exile the creature and you make the bat, and then somebody kills the bat before it does combat damage to any player,
see ya.
The vampire's just stuck in exile forever now.
Yeah, I like Timothar a lot. It's actually, could you make a Tim deck around this? It is Tim, right? There are some who calls me Timothar.
There are some who call me Tim? Athar?
Athar? So some of the best options here are Bloodline Necromancer. It's a vampire that when it ETBs, you can return a vampire or wizard creature from your graveyard to the battlefield. Battlefield. So you get to do that over and over again with Timothar. Now keep in mind the bats have to hit
Jimmy
another
with
player.
Dad jokes this
I know
episode.
I'm feeling it. Like, yeah. There's Blood Tithe Collector. When it enters the battlefield, if an opponent lost life this turn, each opponent discards a card, which is exactly what happens when you hit them with a bat, right? So
yeah, think how good that is. You hit them, play this, they all discard a card, you sack it. It turns into a bat. You hit him with a bat.
Play it.
It comes back. They discard a card. Like, that's so brutal.
Yeah, that's not a lot of fun for your opponents. Champion of Dusk is the one that where you're going to draw X cards and lose X life for X number of vampires you control. So these are just, again, ways you just want to keep doing this sort of thing. Malakir Blood Witch is a way to make everyone drain life simultaneously.
For how many vampires you got.
Blah, blah, blah.
Patron of the Vein destroys creatures and pumps your other creatures. Yeah, I like this one. Simple cards like this one are going to be real important in this deck.
Dusk Legion Zealot. It's one in the black for a 1/1. When it enters the battlefield, you draw a card and you lose a life, which is like the classic black thing to do. And you want to do a lot of that in this
deck. Yeah, and then if you have a Sack Outlet, it's great. But also, like, you just block with a 1/1. It's just going to thwart aggression because you want your thing to die to turn into a bat so you can attack, and it comes back and draws you another card.
It's very thematic. I like the idea of it. Like, you know, it's always in those movies when they try and kill the vampire. Yeah. It poof, into a bat and it flies away. And you're like, dang it. Yeah. Same thing with Drawn the Last Blood Chief. This was played by D on the game nights. So you can, you know, it's attacking a bunch. You're going to bring a lot of stuff back. Blah, 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 blah. I think if you wanted to go kind of nuts, you can make all your creatures vampires. We have Maskwood, Nexus, and Conspiracy, both cards that allow you to mess with the tribal factor. So now all of a sudden you can make some other interesting cards into black. And you have every tutor in the world to get these cards in your hand.
Yeah, Conspiracy is an enchantment that sort of also does this. And I think because black is such a good tutor color, there's probably like an alternate Timothar deck,
and
it's, honestly, I hate to say it, but it's probably more powerful than the vampire one.
Probably.
Where you just turn, you get, your main goal is tutor for Masswood Nexus or Conspiracy early in the game, name vampires, and then from then on out, all the other creatures you play are just vampires, and they will trigger the bat thing, and now you can have like Grey Merchant of Asphodel.
Oh yeah.
Or Sidisi Undead Vizier is really good as bat thing. Shriek Maw, because it evokes, immediately turns into the bat, then does the thing.
Oh my gosh. Those are both really good.
And then black has a lot of ETB effects that are like that, and now you're just saying, oh, you don't also have to be a vampire. So you can go in that direction too, I think.
Yeah, the deck is probably a mix of the good vampires, like the ones we mentioned, because they're, after a while, you're not going to get amazing ones, and then the Conspiracy Maskwood Nexus combo to get your other cards out.
I mean, I think it's fine if people are like, oh, I want to make this kind of vampire deck and I want to keep a vampire tribal. That's that's cool too. But yeah, there's probably a version of the deck that's just like, no, I'm going to use the quote-unquote historically good Kokusho style stuff.
Right.
Turn that into vampire.
Oh, now man. It's
going to be brutal, right?
Just multiple Kokusho triggers. That's pretty awesome.
I mean, Great Merchant is already brutal enough, but yeah.
And then I guess you want to run a lot of sack effects because you want to be able to get rid of the creatures and then turn them into bats. So Kalitas is a vampire that does so. So is Yeheni, another card that does so. And then you got your regular like vampiric rites. I really like Sorin Imperious Bloodlord. This is an older Sorin because it allows you to sacrifice a vampire, and then Sorin does 3 damage to any target and you gain 3 life. So it can also be like a murder spell with the +1, and it's pretty cheap to get out.
Man, Sorin not looking great in the arc. He's looking more like Edgar looks now. Yeah. That should actually give hope to Edgar
that he's going to be okay.
Yeah, because you can come back because you look at Sorin now. Sorin looks amazing in this set. So, Edgar, don't worry.
You'll be good.
Yeah.
Drink some more
blood. Get a little
blood.
Botox. You're going to be fine.
Botox. Blood talks, I guess. And then you have Vampiric Rites, Diabolic Intent. These are always to sack creatures and get extra value. Draw some cards. Viscera Seer, blah, blah, blah.
Viscera Seer is a vampire, too, right?
It is a vampire. That's really good. That's right.
Diabolic Intent, yeah. I really like, because you could sack a vampire to go find, or any creature to go find your Maskwood Nexus. Yeah. Vampirocrats, the next category, which is a lot of the cards that sort of pay you off for what we call aristocrats are vampires. So Blood Artist is sort of the most quintessential, and it comes in the Vampire Precon Aristocrats card, which says, you know, when a creature you control dies, or when a creature dies, you drain one of your opponents for 1. So the fact that you're going to be sacking your creatures, turning them into bats, sacking those bats, turning them back into creatures, is a loop that will pay you off on Blood Artist, on Falcon Wrath Noble.
Yeah, really good.
And yeah, you can even run the non-vampire ones too, but you know, if you want to run the Zulaport Cutthroats and stuff, I think it would be fine. And then there's like Butcher of Malakir, Grave Pact, Dictate of Erebos synergies, because you're sacrificing your creatures over and over. There's a way, you know, there's a mean version of this too, where you're like, yeah, not only am I sacrificing my creatures, turning them into bats, sacking those, but every time I do that, you're losing creatures and you can just never keep creatures on the board.
You really need it though, because you need your bats to hit someone in order to turn back into the creatures.
They have flying though. You're going to be able to hit one player.
Yeah. I think the thing with Timothar is it is pretty fragile because it requires Timothar to be out, but it does make people discard a card to target him with the ward, so that is relevant. But the entire strategy sort of hinges around Timothar. Otherwise, you're just kind of playing like a typical black keep people at bay, murder everything type
deck. But honestly, all those cards are good. They all have ETB effects. So even if Timothar's not out, and the one thing I like about Timothar as opposed to some of these blink decks, right, where if Timothar's not out, you play a card like, you know, Bloodline Necromancer, get another, you get the trigger, and then you can play Timothar afterwards, sack it, and still, you know, he doesn't have to be out at the time that you play the card.
Yeah. You could play like Vex Vampire Hexmage and just remove, just never let anyone have any counters or anything, because you'll always just keep bringing this back over and over again. I don't know. Black's got a lot of ways to do this thing. So Timothar seems like it's like got its hand in a few pies. It's really just sort of up to you, the player, what direction you're willing to push it in.
I think it simulates a Blink deck about as good as Black has been able to.
Yeah, that's right? A good point. I like that.
But it's not just Blink. Like you said, Vampire Hexmage and things like that also work with it, because that's a sacrifice effect.
Right.
So if you're sacrificing stuff for value, which Black always does, you can get that value that way too. Pretty cool card. I like it. I like the design on it.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, that's going to do it for the monocolored commanders. Thank goodness there weren't too many. Our throats are saved.
We still do have the In the 99 analysis coming up, and then I think we have one of the budget precon upgrades still coming up. So we got a little more Crimson Vow to talk about, but again, we're trying to limit our set review season for each set, so that'll be it. Okay, let's really quickly here, Jimmy, we like to do a little wrap up talking about what we think is the most powerful new monocolored commander that we talked about today. I think we agree.
Yeah, it's got to be the mono blue one.
Jacob. I think Donald's also pretty good, but Jacob, I think, is the most powerful. Yeah,
Donald, I think, is the most fair of them all. It, also, not that fair, but Jacob is the one that just says, flip it, win the game sometimes.
Yeah. If you do the extra turns version, it feels like it's going to be quite powerful.
Yeah.
And then our personal favorite new monocolored commander. You want to go first?
Yeah, I like Timothar. I think Timothar speaks to what I like to do. Steal creatures, sacrifice them, sacrifice creatures, get stuff back, reuse things over and over again. And I really, again, like the theme of turning them into bats and then back into creatures.
Yeah. I think I'm going to say Donald, because I think it is a cool thing to sort of get double of anything that you cast.
Yeah.
It's not super complicated. But
Doble Donald.
It sounds fun, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, to the listeners, let us know, as always, what commanders of the six monocolor ones are you excited to build, or maybe even the multicolor ones. Obviously, we're still in Crimson Vow season, so if you have any sweet tech that we missed, let us know. You can comment in the YouTube video, you can tweet at us, you can talk to us pretty much everywhere. Our patrons get to talk to us on Discord, so that's like the premium way to be like, hey, what does Jimmy and Josh think about this cool combo?
Yeah, you definitely can ask us questions directly, and we answer all our patrons just as fast as we possibly can. Don't forget, if you want to pick up any of these cards or any of the cards or any of the multicolored commanders, or you want to get a set booster or a collector's booster or something cool like that.
Yeah, or any card from History of Magic.
Go to channelfireball.com/command. That is supporting us and supporting all of our content while simultaneously getting all the magic cards you want. You can also order, you know, cool product and Ultra Pro things like these deck boxes.
Do like these deck boxes.
I don't know for sure that these are available on the marketplace because these tend to be hard to find. They're so popular that they sell out very fast, but products like this are available there. These Ultra Pro deck boxes with the nice leather finish that we keep talking about are just so, so sweet. And
they catch your eye the moment you enter a room, too. You just can't stop looking at them.
Yeah, they're very classy, just the way they've done it with the stitching, with the leather finish and everything like that. So really, really like them. If you ever find them at your LGS or on the Channel Fireball Marketplace or something like that, definitely highly recommend picking them up. You won't be disappointed. You put them down on the table, like Jimmy said. People go, whoa, that's cool.
Yep, and it fits a whole double sleeve commander deck, all that good stuff.
Okay, it's time for the end step. We're talking about something cool outside the world of magic.
This one you're very excited about, or dreading, I don't know.
I am excited, but I wish I wasn't, because excitement can lead to disappointment.
Yeah, manage those expectations. Although I will say, with Dune, I was pleasantly surprised and happy with how it came out, and I wasn't too excited going in there, so...
So far, we've had two of my favorite books of all time turned into mass media in the past, like, 2 months.
Yeah, pretty crazy.
And Dune, I agree, was a win. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
I was happy with it. Foundation...
I couldn't make it past the second episode.
Yeah, the second episode was pretty bad. It got a little better, but like, I'll just say on that one. And the third one is coming up, and I think is actually, these were my favorite books for a long, long time. In my tail end of high school, I started reading them, and then, you know, there's like a million books, and all the books are like 1,000 pages, so like a lot invested in this series. So it's The Wheel of Time. And it is a huge high fantasy sprawling epic along the lines of Lord of the Rings and Game of Thrones. And I would say more sprawling, more epic, and more complicated than either of those by a pretty wide margin, which makes me trepidatious because that's a lot to try and you know, put on screen in the fantasy series and all that. But Amazon Prime is trying to pull it off. And this first season of the series starts on November 19th.
Do we know if it's going to be like hour-long episodes? I'm assuming
they're hour-long. One of the great things about streaming is like they don't have to stick to exactly an hour, but it's probably like in the mold of Game of Thrones. I don't know how they're going to do it. I think they're going to do it weekly, but probably do the thing. The new model seems to be that like you start a series and you drop like two to three of them at the beginning, and then you drop them weekly.
Yeah, get them invested, get them hooked enough into the story that they know what's happening or about to happen, kind of, right?
But they're not doing that thing that Netflix did for a long time anymore, it seems like, where they everything just drop the entire season all at once.
Yeah.
So Wheel of Time comes out on November 19th on Prime, and Jimmy, you've seen the trailers and stuff.
I think it looks pretty decent, but that's the thing about trailers, and you should know this as a trailer editor.
Yep.
You really can't tell sometimes. Sometimes you can. Sometimes you're like, oh, no, that can't. It's like, can't put lipstick on a pig, but this pig looks pretty good.
I like to say that if it looks bad from a trailer, it's almost certainly bad.
Ah, okay.
Because if you couldn't make it look good, then there's probably no not way. Enough good stuff there.
But
if it looks good from a trailer, it does not guarantee that it's good, because trailer people are good enough at polishing things up that they can make something that's mediocre look good.
But
I will say the trailers look pretty cool. Every time I've watched something, I've tried to avoid it. I've been like, oh, dang it, it looks cool. I'm starting to get excited. It's a really, really cool story. It has a cool, unique magic system. I'm obviously talking about it because I hope it's good. I hope it does well. And I want people to watch it so that they keep making it.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to encourage everybody out of the audience.
It's Amazon, though. They're dropping buco bucks on series. So hopefully it patches whatever metric it needs to get past. Because
it has Rosamund Pike in it. She looks great.
I mean, how many books are there now?
Are there 13 books? There are 13,
and they're all 1,000 pages each minimum.
Yeah, they're some of them are like 700. I mean, if you stacked them, they would easily be like off the screen probably.
So that means that there is minimum at least 13 seasons potentially, right? That's the idea.
Yeah, listen, I don't want to. Okay, should we get into this? So Robert Jordan, who wrote the books, he got sick and ended up passing away before finishing the series. And our good friend Brandon Sanderson, who was on this show, actually stepped in and finished the last three books of the series and did a bang up job, by the way.
Yeah.
I'd say like the first six and seven books are awesome, amazing, and then it meanders and starts to get a little bit. It loses its way a little bit in there. And
Game Jordan of Thrones-y.
I think Robert Jordan is getting sick, and it's hard once, you know, as you're world creating, I think it gets hard. You throw out all these strands and these stories develop, and then it's like, oh, I got to bring these all back in and end it in some way. And I think that was tough. But it does end in a really cool way. So there are some stuff in the middle I think they could just cut down.
Okay.
So maybe we don't have to have 13, 14 seasons of this thing. It'd be nice to get it down to like 7 or 8, like Game of Thrones. It would have to be mega popular to make it to that end. But there are like points along the way that I think you could wrap up the story, as it were, in some way. Maybe
sort of like the end ?
I don't know. I'm not worried about the end at this point. I just hope it gets past the beginning and doesn't trip and fall on his face. You know?
Yeah, that would be a bummer. Like Foundation really was upsetting because it looked that was one where the trailers looked
beautiful,
sweet,
right?
And I was like, oh, this is gonna be cool, big sci-fi action. And it was like, oh, I don't know.
Yes, by like the middle of the second episode, you're like, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care, even though I like the actors and I like the setting. So, fingers crossed, November 19th on Prime, Wheel of Time. I've been seeing online, too, there's a lot of attention being paid to this. This is a very popular series, so.
Yeah, they have a really big Twitter community. I tweeted out about it a couple of times and just got like tons of people talking to me about it. Like, whoa. So, yeah, Wheel of Time, please watch it. At least the first couple episodes.
And
if you don't
like
it, there. Yeah. All right.
Cleanup stuff. Big thanks to our amazing team here at the Command Zone, which is Arthur Mellowcroft, Lady Danger, Manson Lund, Craig Blanchett, Ashlyn Rose, Josh Murphy, Jake Boss, Patrick Nan, Jordan Pridgen, Sam Waldo, Gaurav Galati, Truck Ty, Jamie Block, Damon Lynn, Shauna Gillis, and Evan Limburger. Holy moly.
Hey, you did that pretty well. Is that all one breath?
Yeah, I always try to. One time I got close and I failed halfway through. I had to take a breath around Jamie or so, yeah. And of course, special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer, who occasionally does the Living Card animations behind this, but most importantly, does the ones that start our show, that awesome soaring. You can find him on Twitter at Living Cards MTG.
All right, everybody. Thanks for watching.
And we will see you for the next review thing.
Peace.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com. Or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.
Angie has made it easier than ever to connect with skilled professionals to get all your jobs projects done well.
I absolutely love this because, you know, if you own a home, it can be really hard to maintain. It's hard to find people that can help you for a big project or a small. Well, whether it's in everyday maintenance and repairs or making dream projects a reality, it can be hard just to know where to start. But now all you need to do is Angie that. And find a skilled local pro who will deliver the quality and expertise you need. Angie has over 20 years of home service experience, and they've combined it with new tools to simplify the whole process. Bring them your project online or with the Angie app, answer a few questions, and Angie can handle the rest from start to finish. Or help you compare quotes from multiple pros and connect instantly, which means you can take care of just about any home project in just a few taps, because when it comes to getting the most out of your home, you can do this when you Angie that. Download the free Angie mobile app today or visit Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I.com.